Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
A grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that, lad.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on, Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Our mission was to show that we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.
Okay, folks, how are you all doing? You're very welcome to another Irish Examiner podcast. Mad weekend. I don't think I've ever seen as much hurling in the one weekend. The one in the flesh was quite painful for all Clarecastle people. There wasn't too many allowed into it, but it was tough going. We were very young and we suffered as a result. But in Clare, it's the next one really that counts. But today we're delighted to be joined by, as well as Mark and TJ and Larry, we have Derek McGrath with us down in the school in Waterford, in De La Salle. There, the internet is a bit better there than home, is it?
Yeah, where I'm living now in Waterford is fairly primitive, to say the least. So, yeah, internet is a bit better here in school. Albeit it's a school that's probably facing major surgery over the next 6 weeks or 8 weeks, given the recommendations this morning in terms of going back to school, you know.
And come here, there, what's going to happen? Is there loads of work have to take place in the school? I didn't see the guidelines yet now.
Yeah, well, look, I don't really know, to be honest, but we're lucky, I suppose, in that no different than where you went yourself in Flannans. We've a big school here, like 1,200 boys, huge acreage, huge capacity, I suppose, in terms of the influx of students over the years. So we have the space, I suppose. Now, I'm down in the dungeon of the school. I'm down the A floor in my classroom, small classroom. But what's proposed in terms of a metre distance between each guys, I'd imagine, you know, it's suggested this morning that we could be out in the gym, or it could be the old school scenario where the students stay in the class and the teachers come to the class, you know, which is, when I was a first year here in 1989, the boys stayed in the class and we came into the classroom. So you could be looking at a scenario like that, or even staggered kind of intake of junior cycle students and then the senior boys coming later in the day. But look, I think there's the general consensus is that people would like to be up and at it again, if you like, you know, and once we're safe and well, if you like.
And Derek, just while I suppose I'm a young fella going to second year, I just hope that they're all going back to school. That'd be great. I think it is essential for the kids to get back to school. So whatever needs to be done, I suppose, that's important. But in relation to hurling and, I suppose, in GAA in schools, is there any roadmap there? Like, will you be able to take these lads to a match on a bus? Is there any, or is that just all to follow once the kids are back in school?
Yeah, interestingly enough, now, my best mate, a guy called Dermot Dooley, played with Cool there for years now, playing with De La Salle over the years now, is on charge of the Hearty this year. And like most people in charge of the Hearty, now, Bugler will tell you there in Flannans, they're planning already for the Hearty, you know, and looks like the Hearty's going to be straight knockout, 8 quarter-finalists from last year in one hat, the other 8 in the other hat. And, you know, the anomaly there now is the fact that the under-20 competition is going to be run in the autumn as well, and the minor will be run in the autumn as well. So you could be looking at it probably a post-Christmas Hearty as opposed to a September-October Hearty, given the fact that, you know, club championships will only be finished. And now, I'm not sure of that, but it's going to be difficult. You know, that type of stuff is difficult. Do you co-op parents in terms of cars? You know, are you back to the old school way of every parent has two or three lads from the one club in their car going to a school match? Because we're just in the dark, I suppose, around that particular thing. But I think no different than ourselves. Fellas are very conscious of making sure that fellas are tying in with what's happening at club level, that they're back playing games in school, because school without the hurling now, I know there's a kind of we're selfish when it comes to that, but school without any type of extracurricular activity, whether it's choir, whether it's music, whether it's hurling or soccer or Gaelic football, whatever, it's you know, it's not a great place for the natural holistic development of fellas. So we'd be keen on getting the boys back to the old school way of, you know, togging out on the side of the field, you know, having the back to the class leagues almost, you know, simplifying it more so than we've done over the last few years. And once we have them up and at it, I think we'll be fine, you know.
Yeah, there I see, I'm talking about talking out on the side of the field, I see your own club there, De La Salle. You had a little gazebo, had you, just to keep the boys dry there before you took on the belly saggard lads and give them a warm Trimble. Welcome to Senior Hurling.
Yeah, it's interesting enough. I was up watching the boys train on Thursday night, just winding down ahead of their match against, and they had a kind of a similar one up set up, you know, for the physio and that kind of stuff, you know, at training. And then they obviously went the whole hog on Saturday night. The sponsor there, obviously, was getting his tuppence worth as well in terms of John Kelly Motors. He's been great to the club. So it was, look, it's interesting. Actually, the photo in the Examiner is interesting in that. If you study it closely, you can actually see Stephen or Shane Bennett. I can't make me get which one of the Bennetts he's having a right good look at. As if to say, these fellas are kind of, you know, they think they're kind of above every station. So look, it's interesting. I think it's, the boys were just planning in a scenario if it was raining or if there was a scenario where they can get together. You know, people are looking at the 15-minute breaks. How do they get together? They're looking at the half-time. How do they recreate a kind of dressing room atmosphere, I suppose? And look, it's thinking outside the box, and it's for me, it'll probably be followed in at other levels during the year, you know.
As Leo Vrecker, yes. I know he's not much of a hurling man, but this is senior hurling now. for the Bennetts, like first time up senior. This is senior now, lads. We do that.
135 years, Dela, since Belly Sager played senior.
Yeah, it's hard to figure out what was going on 135 years ago in terms of the senior championship. There wasn't gazebos anyway, Mark.
No, Aston Gleeson, Derek was outstanding, was he? Three from play, two frees, 165, two sidelines.
Yeah, look, and I think I watched it yesterday. You know, you got streamed in there yesterday, so I'm commentary and all, so I watched it at home yesterday. And yeah, look, he looks in great shape, first and foremost. I think everyone has, you know, has seen how great a shape he's in. And look, sometimes it's hard to follow that up then. When you expose yourself in that manner, it's hard to follow it up. And he's looks to be in a great place mentally and physically, and followed it up with a great performance yesterday from the middle of the field. Sitting back there in the first half, got a couple of monstrous scores. And look, he was all over the field. And when he's like that, let's be honest, he's up there with the top three or four hurlers in the country when he's like that physically and mentally. And it's great both for Waterford and Mount Sinai to see him like that, you know. So please God, he'll continue into the autumn, you know.
And overall, there Waterford went kind of according to plan, didn't it? The results, there was no real shock.
No. Look, and it's not been withering of the assessment of anyone else, but if they avoid each other, it looks like a Ballygunner or De La Salle final from the outset. You know, they look to be a good bit ahead of every other team. Albeit, you know yourselves, any team can be caught on a given day. Formoyle had a great win. They were outsiders against Dungarvan. I think they had a really, really good win. You know, probably, in terms of the bet, I think they were 7-4 or 2-1, you know, against Dungarvan, and they were probably the outside bet of the weekend. But yeah, looks like a Ballygunner or De La Salle a good bit ahead of everyone else, and the rest kind of playing catch up. So next weekend will be interesting in that the teams that obviously lost this weekend are under serious pressure when it's only a two game championship.
Yeah, and I just see, just a quick one, Mark, just yep. On a Ballygunner, 34 matches unbeaten in championship. It's some good. I'd say since the days of Cross McGlynn in Armagh, it was hardly known, was it, for a club to dominate for that length?
Yeah, and do you know what, Dale? Like, they're after winning 22 of the last 24 county finals, whether they won them or not. They're after winning 22 of the last 24 county finals. And, you know, there's a lot of them come through a school here, and the easy thing to say is, numbers. They have huge numbers. And, you know, but they work really hard. Like, they work really hard, and there's some great leaders amongst them. And you know, they're constantly kind of trying to raise the bar every year. And we're all playing catch-up, ourselves included, in this hall. And look, we'd fancy a cut-off now. If we got a cut-off from this year, we'd, like any team, you'd fancy a rattle off them. But I think that's often gets lost. It gets lost when you talk about Ballygunner. They'd be saying, and it's huge numbers. And, you know, whereas the concentration and the hard work and how well they're coached and how well they work and how well they're led, like the likes of Philip Manny, Shane Sullivan, these guys, they're at it years and they're solid kind of guys, you know. And we're all playing catch-up, as I said.
Yeah, kind of reminds me of Six Mile Bridge in some ways. You know, that some lads would say, kind of, like, is he nearly gone? And then you turn on the stream and there, I bought that match, Airog and Six Mile Bridge. And just see how solid the same fellas, that some years you think, well, he'll be nearly gone now for next year. And they come out again and they're the same. They're just solid and they get the job done. And they weren't spectacular, the Bridge, in any way. But yeah, you just got the job done with 14 men, and it's amazing. Did anyone jump out in terms of what you saw in Waterford. Maybe you were keeping an eye on Wexford, obviously, with your role with the Harriers as well. The county players, did anyone jump out for you?
Well, I think the very obvious thing is that nearly all the county players are right up and at it in terms of how they're playing, you know. Yeah. And you know, the outstanding players for the Ballysagard are obviously the Bennetts, and they performed. Jack Fagan was on fire for De La Salle with 112. Kevin and Jake doing very well as well. Desi Hutchison 2-5 for Ballygunner. You know, all the players, Jamie Barron, 6 points from play last night for and you know, there's an argument there that the freshness that has come as a result of, you know, we going back to their clubs, I suppose, for a period after training hard with the county has kind of, you know, freed the whole thing up mentally, and they seem to be going really well now. Now, that bears fruit, you'll probably be talking about in a while. I think Tony Kelly got 7 points in Clare. You know, I think all the county players are producing for their clubs, which is very welcome.
Yeah, the game I was at was our own club against Wolf Tones, and Aaron Shanahar, 2-9. He just 2-3 from play, you know, just more than we went with, because we had a few niggly injuries, we went to 13 under 21s and Jonathan Clancy and Stephen O'Halloran with them. And it just, you know, they had a few of the old guard, the O'Connells and Barry Lucknan and lads like that that had been around the block, and they just kind of out muscled. But we had literally nobody that could compete with Shanahar in the air, you know, you can see just the county boys, you know, as I said, like what I saw, the matches I streamed, I didn't see the Belly A game now, but again, TK, as you said, 7 from play, like in a tight game, a 16-14 game, it is amazing. And in Wexford, you're out again next weekend, Derek.
Yeah, interesting one enough, like that the team that, now we played Ferns last week, the Harriers, if you like, and very lucky to overcome Ferns. Ferns kind of had all the play and we got there in the end. And the irony of it is now, Ferns, by winning their match by 3 points on Saturday night, they're actually true. And our game is a winner-take-all game in terms of Federer, you know, on Friday night. So, yeah, but look, you know what? The slingshot nature of it is exciting to players. From what I'm getting from the players is that first of all, there's no worry of relegation. The Harriers have been in relegation too over the last 3 years. So they feel they have a shot at anything, if you like, in terms of where they are. They realise where they are. Like yourselves in Clare Castle, there's 3 or 4 guys that were on the Wexford minor panel last year. You can promote them straight. And you're kind of, without obviously taking the heat off myself or anyone, you're in a kind of a win-win situation as such, in that, you know, you have a win under the belt. If you were unlucky enough to lose on Friday night, you could go out on goal difference, or you could stay in on goal difference. So it's a winner takes all, but sure, that's what it's all about. It's very exciting. And now, if you balance that against the Rapparees, who were semi-finalists last year, they lost their 2 opening games in 7 days and their championship is over. And, you know, you could come back and you could say, Jesus, 7 days is not long enough at the championship. And you know, you need a longer run at it. Liam Ryan was injured, if you like, and they had to play without Liam Ryan for 2 games. And then they're out of the championship on the back of 7 days. So, yeah, it's interesting. But it's you know what? There seems to be kind of, as I said, a kind of an acceptance there amongst the players that there's a bit of certainty as to when they're playing in the overall debate between club and county. At least they know when they're playing week in, week out. And if it's over, it's over. They move on and they get ready for next year as such. And if you continue, it's all the better. But my impression of the Wexford Championship now is that it's a very even, very kind of even championship. Martins look to be ahead of the posse, if you like, and it's even after that as such.
Yeah, and you still have that weapon, young chin. Sorry, TJ. Go on.
Yeah, very obviously very impressive. Derek, how did you find the lack of the dressing room environment? Did you kind of notice it? Like, it was, we played championship as well. We held out in the stand there, right? So it's just weird. I suppose we're all just very used to getting the bag and hopping in the dressing room. And it's a great environment because it keeps everybody tight. And those couple of minutes before you go into pitch, you can get everyone together. It's more difficult in an open environment in the stand. I just wonder how you got on with that.
Yeah, and even subconsciously you're thinking you don't want to be balling fellas out of it in front of it. Well, you know, you kind of feel that everyone's kind of listening to you. So, you know, you're nearly watching yourself, which is an awful way to be in life when you're kind of watching what you're doing or watching what you're saying. You know, I found that the first match against Ferns, for instance, at Belfield, it was only 150 or 200 people there, whatever, in total. And just very hard to recreate a dressing room, albeit dressing rooms are a little bit different. You know yourselves, there's only probably a minute or two where you actually really go at them, if you like. And now there's so much bloody activation and mobilisation and you're getting ready. But there's still that period in a dressing room where you can actually create, I think, I'd argue with anyone, a bit of electricity, a bit of madness, if you like. No different than Anthony talked about this morning in his column, you know, with the whole Loch Nan thing. Incidentally, I was a well down the pecking order sub that day, and thank God I didn't get back. But I must have fine. And I was just praying in my innocence as a 22 year old, I just, I hope I don't get near this. I hope I don't have to go into this madness. sometimes you're delighted when you get number 25 jersey, because back in those days, it was nearly always 16 to 21 that were guaranteed to get on. You know, it was kind of name like that, but I know I'm going off topic. But it's definitely weird. And you know what? Even the 15 minute breaks are weird. Nearly feel you have to say something, and sometimes you're better off saying nothing. I'd say, leave them back out,
we were over-egging it
on management's behalf.
We were a bit the same, Derek. I have to say, like before the game, Jimmy didn't mind to be kind of going mad or in the stand, but then we found ourselves at half time, we were 213 to 10 points down, so that completely changed at half time.
And TJ, did you manage to stay in the field for the whole game?
I did, of course. Yeah.
You spent a bit of time in the stand there at this time.
No. I said that was last year, so no, I was fine. But yeah,
sound old ref. So this time,
Alan Kelly, top man, yeah.
Alan Kelly, very good. You're the intercounty man, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
We won't mention ghost goals or anything like that while we're Derek.
No, definitely not.
TJ, you got there. I was following you on Twitter, and I was saying you were in trouble. In fairness to you, last week you said it would be Pierce Stadium. Possibly a game of two halves, and that's the way it was, obviously.
Yeah, I was slagging there earlier again about that wind in Pierce Stadium. And I suppose it's nearly always been a game of two halves anytime we played there. But I suppose, first of all, you have to credit Castlegar. They got a couple of goals with a couple of points they got in the first half there. 2-13 to 10 down at half time. I think we were 11 down, I think, even at one stage. But look, credit to our guys. They stuck at it. And look, it's a good sign of a team. I know they've the last two counties won. And I suppose you're always kind of maybe wondering if the hunger and the drive is still there, but it showed in the second half. And again, like our county boys, like David Burke, Anna Burke, Conor Cooney, Shane Cooney, all these boys, Dermot Finton Burke, stood up big time in the second half, and we got there. So it's a bit like a horse maybe first day out, winning by that short head. You'd be hoping and expecting and putting pressure on ourselves to improve, but it's just a case of job done and move on.
But you probably still have about £16 in hand, like,
well, you know yourself, Dale, you always need to have a couple of pounds up your sleeve for any race or any competition these days. Like, so it's the early days. Like, you can't win the county championship early doors, but you can certainly lose it. So look, we want to make sure that we get qualified. We have Sarsfields coming down the track there in 2 weeks' time, and then Portumna after that. So you can't look in Galway. Everyone knows the competitiveness and the fierceness of their club championship, and you mean teams are well capable of taking each other out on a given day. So you can't take your eye off the ball for a sec. So as I said, it's just a question of that box is ticked. Now let's move on.
And going back, like I was in 6 Mile Bridge, as I said, which would be a smaller kind of, you know, not a county ground, but be the second biggest, I suppose, nearly in Clare, with a send and that. How did you find your stadium with the 200 people?
Yeah, it's just very strange. I hope, and I think there should be a change coming this week for championship for the weekend. I think on clubs, and maybe definitely on club secretaries and club chairmen, this call is particularly hard. I know some teams or some clubs have sent tickets back rather than choosing 30 or 40 people out of a club, which is a hard call to make, because there's an awful lot of people who are both members of the club and doing a lot of work, be it underage or whatever, and love to go to club matches. So I think that call needs to be reversed this week. It was strange. Probably the dressing room, like Derek there, was kind of maybe the weird. It's just, look, we're creatures of habit, I suppose, and going to a dressing room before a game starts, that's kind of all part of the norm and part of the preparation. It was just new and it was different. And as I said there at halftime, things went out the window. The water breaks. We were crying out for the water break in the first half, Dale, all right, because we were under the cosh, right? But then in the opening quarter, the second half, we hit 10 points in the bounce and we're kind of saying, no, we don't want the water break. So I think there's a bit of that going on in a lot of places. Again,
Alan, our lads are going for water. Yeah, it's okay.
It's great to be playing. And like just you spoke about there, it was great. Like I was driving up to Galway on Saturday and listened to Radio 1 there, and there was a football match on from Wicklow, and Damien Lawler was reporting from a hurling match like Moore and stuff, and there was other reports coming in. This is magic for the club players. The pitches are in great order. Like there's grass in the goal mouths in Pierce Stadium. Like it looks really, really well. So I think the club player, like Derek said there, for the county player, he's fresh. He's giving it all for his club. We are seeing good games. The county players are standing up. It's the way it should be. And I do think, we touched on it last week, we won't have time to talk about it this week. I think that there has to be a realignment of the club with the inter-county season. I don't know what the solution is, but we need to get some smart people or some smart group together, and the thinking needs to come out of it. But the club game, for me, is majorly benefiting, and we will see more of that over the next coming weeks, which is great.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the water breaks. Mark, from a distance, what's your thinking or your feeling on them?
Yeah, I actually spoke to two guys who were involved with teams over the weekend about the water breaks, and both of them said exactly the same thing, Anthony. They said God, it was a great thing during the course of both the first half and the second half to be able to talk to lads. Because, look, sometimes you might be trying to send a message into the field and it doesn't actually get in there. But when you have guys coming together in a group, you can get your message across to the players. And, you know, an awful lot of work goes into preparing a team from a management's point of view. And you only get one chance to speak to them during the course of the game in the old days. But the general feeling was that, you know, getting to talk to the lads a bit more often is a good idea. And players as well. We also must remember that players, you know, haven't done nothing for maybe 4 or 5 months, have come back up and are trying to get back up to the speed that they're at. That players do need a break as well from an injury point of view and just from an oxygen point of view, to get a bit of a breather into them. So the general consensus down our way is that it has been very, very positive, Anthony.
Yeah. It's something, Derek, we spoke about on the podcast before, that should a team be allowed one timeout per game under the old circumstances? Now, I'm not talking about the new normal we're living in. I suppose as a manager, you'd be really voting for it. But I saw a lot on social media, people giving out about it. You know, that the game was in a good bit of flow. We're after seeing 2 or 3 great points, maybe, or a goal and a point. And the next thing, a fucking water break. No, I was right behind the Clarecastle lads when they had their water break. And you know, it was constructive for them, I'd say. But I thought opinion was mixed on social media. But as a manager, I suppose you would love it.
Yeah, and it's probably all dependent on how you're going, as you said. Like, and if say if we're out of it now, like in terms of your roles now, if you're out in the management game, you're out of playing, you're kind of saying, Jesus, it was flowing there. Is there any need for it? So it depends on where you are at any given stage. You know, if you're, I take it back to the Harriers game last week. We'd say, like, the boys had got it back to level, and 15 minutes in the second half, they were back level, and the water break came, and then Ferns went 3 points up again after the water break. You know what I mean? So if you have momentum and you have kind of a hold in the game, how many times over the years have you seen fellas going down injured to kind of break momentum or you know, to pull some sort of roof? So yeah, look, I think when the normality resumes, please God it will, over the, I think it'll be a, you know, I'd rather keep the flow, the more instinctive nature of the whole flow. And if you like, the interesting thing for me will be not so much even at club level, at inter-county level, watching the planning around the water breaks. You know, I'd imagine the likes of Davey now, you know, if there's a puck out, for instance, he might go at 9 forwards for a few minutes. You know, you'd be surprised what fellas will try now on the back of, you know, say for instance, if it goes dead and you have the puck out situation, you might line your backs up with 7 or 8. So I think you'll see little tricks around it. You might see kind of things around it as the season goes on, where fellas can make the most of it when they come back on the pitch. I was just watching the Port Home again yesterday. You know, I was saying to myself, at the end of the water break, is there anything you could do now to kind of, you have the possession in your hand, would you go like with 7 or 8 forwards up there for a few minutes and just lob it up where you have the numbers? And so I'd be interested to see, will fellas come up with something around the 15-minute break, you know, as they go back on the pitch. You know, the referees didn't look to be kind of counting as they would normally when they throw it in. They kind of have a look on either side. It's just basically blow the whistle and puck it out. And I guarantee you before the year is out, we'll see something that'll be, you know, fairly innovative on the back of that, you know.
Yeah, brilliant. And I can see TJ Ryan there. The mind is working already. As to the next round for Thomas is now, what's he going to do? Get the puck out, you know.
We had to play with 7 forwards for a while there in the second half with in Salt Hilldale, because we were chasing number one and they had an extra man back. But just on Derek's point there, like, one of the things that was strange, some of our players, it was a little bit of confusion for the restart, because you weren't sure, like, where is the ball? Like, is it a puck out the far side? So that did cause a little bit of confusion, because I think, again, we're programmed for a throw-in restart, you know, so it's just getting used to that.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, with the gas thing about our, you know, we're all giving out the number, Mark, maybe you're saying, maybe hopefully there'll be an announcement about numbers being increased this week, and we'll be looking at maybe getting 400 people in the ground.
Well, you see in the North now, at the moment, there's 400 allowed into all matches above the North. And you also see that any challenge match that you go to, there's definitely 300, 400, 500 people at challenge matches all over the place. So there's no adherence to the social distancing at challenge matches. I know it's a bit more controlled with a championship game and stuff like that, but I'd be hopeful that the government will start to realise that, you know, particularly in the GAA games, and I don't want to sound like we're all GAA here, because look, there's other sports involved with rugby and soccer and other games as well that need their members back. They need the supporters being allowed to get in there. And like, you see the picture on the Examiner today, Dale, of Mungret and Kildaima, where some fella with the JCB, now it's bigger than the JCB, I think, like, but there's eight fellas at the top of it, like, and they're getting a bird's eye view of the match. And I mean, you know, from a health and safety point of view, and I saw the pictures from Wexford, I think there was three or four fellas with ladders hanging in. So, like, the government next needs to take a responsibility here. John Horton mentioned if we lost one player to COVID-19 at the very start. I mean, if we lose one member or a person to an accident, because there is a crying out for people to go to see matches, I think, you know, the government has done a great job up to this point, right? But and I don't care whether it's a big stadium or it's your normal GAA pitch, I've no doubt that we could cater for 500 people at a minimum from a supporter's point of view. People have to take on personal responsibility. They can spread out all over the field, but the last thing you want is people to be putting their own lives at risk by going up in scaffoldings and going up on JCBs to get a view of a match. And I think the government needs to move on this sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think we have to move this week anyway, you know, because like, it was another massive weekend coming, Cork kicking off obviously as well, and probably Kilkenny, yeah. I suppose, and that kind of thing. But guessing about it, TJ, just for you, guessing, like, was I didn't come out of the draw. I think we had 9 tickets, right?
Left over. You remember, Dale, or you are?
Of course, I'm a member. Jesus, go away. Am I a member?
you're nearly qualifying for the OAP number now.
Yeah. Well, when they're putting me down, there better be a black and white freaking flag in the coffin, anyway, I tell you that much. I rang the chairman, who'd be Niall Toohey, Fergie's brother, you know. And I said, Niall, is there any second chance of getting in here at all? I can come out of the draw, you know. And he says, Dale, I think there's not going to be 200 there, because I think Wolf Tones maybe decided that they weren't going to disappoint and have a draw. Do you know? So, and then there was a very attractive match in Cusick Park, which was being streamed live between Kilmaley and Cratlow, which would have been seen probably as the biggest game of the day, and turned out to be a cracker of a game. Cratlow kind of come on with a late. Having led well, Kilmaley came back and could have gone ahead. And then, so when I arrived down, and your man says, yes, there's nowhere near 200 gone in, Dale. He said, go on away in. And when the ball was thrown in, there was 138 people in the bridge. And I said, switch his gas, like, you know. And we all saying, but people genuinely didn't think. And then text started flying around, and we'd be only maybe, you know, 15 minutes from 6 Mile Bridge. And by the time half-time came, they had to stop at the 200 were gone in, because people had heard you could get in, you know. Just tell you the confusion levels and no great and need
know,
of it.
You know what, Anthony? In terms of, it leads to kind of needless, you know, kind of arguments in clubs over, you know, who's getting tickets and who's not getting tickets. You know, like, no different than any club scenario where you find out he has a ticket and she hasn't a ticket, and you know, and I know that goes on in every club, and it's welcome at times of chitter and chatter, but like, if the numbers were increased, like, I think that would be gone. You know what I mean? It was almost like the year we got to the All-Ireland up in De La Salle the other night, you know, fellas looking for tickets, who's getting a ticket, who's not getting a ticket, you know, and it's kind of omerta fashion, then making sure fellas are looked after, making sure sponsors are looked after, and then there's fellas up in the field, and I don't know how it is in your club now, but in De La Salle, they all train together, the intermediates and seniors. So there could be an extended panel of 41, 42 guys, and they're all training together. So the boys in the management, the bull and them, they want to look after the lads that are, you know, that are training all year, you know, in terms of the ticket allocation. And I'd say that's the same scenario in most clubs, you know.
It is, yeah, definitely. But Dale, what I was going to say there was, I see, like, if, like, obviously it's race week in Galway this week, which is obviously major disappointing for the city, number one, and like, to have no idea.
Will we chance going up?
We could. the boss man there is for local man in Knocklong, right? Or he's originally from Knocklong. But what I was going to say is, Goodwood, this weekend are letting 5,000 spectators into the races, right? So in the UK, right? So if they're letting 5,000 in over there, you'll be kind of bringing that back home. Are we maybe a week or two away or three from 5,000, right? But how can it be as low as 200 and then maybe a move to something like a 5,000? Like, surely, like, certainly in most of the grounds, and probably seen the Kilmallock Napiershig game, like Napiershig, or sorry, all around the Gaelic grounds, loads and loads of room spectators. So I hope that that will be sorted. Two things, Dylan, before I move on. Number one, you left me down with Kilmaley. Our double went down because Kilmallock, you left me down again. That's number one. And number two,
Yeah, I know. I actually, first time during lockdown, I went out for a bit of food and a couple of pints out of the tap at last. And the match was coming on. We had a lovely screen in front of us there with them. I said, you wouldn't turn on TG Cahir there. And there was a lad that I'm friendly with who would have an old betting account. And I says, what price are Kilmallock there, Niall? And he says, 4-1 there, Adela. Stick on 20 there. I said, will you? I said, my Limerick expert, I says, thanks, David. This is the chance for the shock of the first round in Limerick. So fair play to you. And Kilmaley had a bloody penalty to go ahead against Crathall after being 2-7 to 2 points down. Do you know, I was listening to that on the way back on Clare FM.
Yeah.
That was a good few lads I kind of let down on that one. I thought that was one. But fairness to Crathall, you know, even missing Carl McInerney and Conor McGrath wasn't fully fit and Billy Connors is gone. Jeez, they're an amazing club and they'll be coming out now first round football this week. You know, massive one again. Like, they're the same bunch of players as well. Like, they're unreal.
But what
what's the other one you want to hit me with?
No, the second one I was in was to make up for it, that you'd surely be good for a horse for the week in Galway. You surely have, with all the connections in Clare there, there's surely something coming up. So we can come back to that in a while. But I'm not sure if you want to go on to the game on Friday night. It was great to see on TG4, Kilmallock and the Pearcy. It was a great game to watch. Two teams. And I suppose the Kilmallock work rate, especially in the forwards there in the second half, really came to the fore. Brilliantly led by Graham Mulcahy. Really, really at the peak of his powers. Got great scores. But there was one piece of skill, I'm not sure if you noticed during the game, for the midfielder, Kieran O'Connor, with just one hand, right? He just flicked the ball to Graham. Now, Graham was in the middle of the field and he nailed it, which made the move even better. But a brilliant piece of skill. Just one hand to flick there and great score. But great win for Kilmallock. Puts them in a good position because the way the championship is structured now, right, effectively you'd be expecting the Well to win their side of the group, right, which will send the Pearshig down that side of the draw, which lines things up nicely for Kilmallock. So all things, I'd say, being even, it should create a nice path for them to the final. I know they won't be agreeing with me today, but that's what you'll be thinking here in Limerick, is that they'll go to the final and you'll have the Well and the Pearshig on the other side.
Okay, yeah, you're dead right, Grant G. Square. Okay, he was inspirational, wasn't he? Like, he was incredible. And I know Kieran O'Connor from my time with the underage, a good lad, great pace, great skill, as you said, on the flick. But I tuned in as well on Thursday. I must say, some people were giving out about the various streamings from the county, and Clare got a bit of grief. I think there was a few gremlins. They got it right. I think eventually the Sunday game was perfect, you know. But, geez, I tuned in Thursday night there for the Well and Adair. Geez, a rip-roaring game as well. I thought, like, there's no Adair, we're definitely going to win it. Like, you know, that Cian Lynch wasn't really in the game. Dermot Burns was struggling a bit on Hannon, but geez, Gillan again, like, didn't he? Just nearly unstoppable up front. Like,
brilliant.
You got 2-8 altogether, 2-4 from player, 2-6 from player, something like that.
Yeah. Great goals. Like, weren't they? And great sign of a team as well, Dela. Just didn't seem to be going well. Adair hit 17 points in the first half. You'd be thinking they're 5 points up at half time, motoring nicely. But again, the Well, good sign of a team, good sign of last year's champions. As I said, they found a way and got home.
But sorry, Dela, isn't it fantastic that we're seeing all the club matches now? Like, because, like, we have been drowned out by the inter-county game over the last decade. And I'm looking at the pages in the Examiner today, like, there's over 20 pages of hurling and football from around Munster on the papers today. And it's the first time that I must say in years that the club player is getting some bit of, I suppose, promotion and pictures. Like, you know, they're definitely the back pep when the inter-county stuff is in full flow. I think this is brilliant for the club player and the club game.
Yeah, it sure is. And I'd say viewer numbers, like the Limerick game, I think was £8, I think, but that would have entitled me to another game, I think, as well. But the Thursday night one I bought, I'd say if, I don't know when would the figures ever be released, Larry, so we'd know how many people. Would that be up to each county board, I wonder?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that, Taylor. Yeah, whether they will release them. We'll have the figures for our matches today. It'll be interesting to see what they were like over the two. Compare them next week with the Hurling as well.
Are Cork the only county that's streaming the matches for free? Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, I think you are.
Yeah, as far as we know, yeah. Owen Cormacan has been tabulating there over the last week. And I don't think there's anybody else. Now, there's a lot of, obviously, unofficial streams around there. Of the official ones, I think so, yeah.
That's because all the millions you've kind of put away in the bank, Mark, and Frank has sorted you out for money. You don't need the revenue from those type of matches. I told you that last week.
But sure, we don't have the godfather in Limerick that you have now, to be fair, who's got an impact. The pocket is so deep there now, TJ. Maybe it's JP you need to get a winner for in Galway, not Dalo.
I see even new sponsors and stuff announced there for the county championships in Cork as well this week.
TJ, brilliant. There's been three really good things, I suppose, out of Cork this week. We've Bond Secures have come on board and are sponsoring the football. The Co-op Superstores have come on stream and are sponsoring the hurling. And the Irish Examiner have agreed a 3-year deal with Cork GAA to stream the matches hurling and football. I think it's what I will say is, I think there's a new brand coming in Cork right now. I think, the Kevin O'Donovan, the Ronan DeWans, that generation have started to come in. Tracy, obviously, being the first female, Tracy Kennedy being the first female chairperson in the county. There is a new brand, I think, coming in Cork. And, the Bonds and the Co-op Superstore coming on stream is massive. But we also have an awful lot of sleeping joints in Cork. You have Apple, Jemison, Pfizer's, Johnson & Johnson. You have international brands that are in Cork, and I think as time goes by with Cork, I think, there's a huge amount of tradition in Cork and hurling and football. If we could get one of those large sponsors on board with the county board, I think, Cork could go anywhere, but we have an awful lot of stuff to correct, I suppose, from, I suppose, previous managements and stuff like that. We definitely have the numbers. When the hurling is starting next weekend, we have 5 grades from Premier Senior, Senior A to Premier Intermediate, Intermediate A and Intermediate B. That's massive numbers across what anyone is talking about. But, that needs to come to the fore. We have the numbers, but we need to start getting the Munster finals and All-Ireland finals and from a hurling perspective, definitely. And I think there's a big change coming down the road, TJ.
Okay, just after that party political broadcast on Corkness, there from the Clare, Tipperary, Waterford, and Limerick point of view, we're all shitting ourselves here. After
but hey, you all know now, and I'd be
saying Waterford are a savage price at 11-4 to beat G Munster.
And particularly when you see Gleeson, Jamie Barron. Darrell Lyons.
We're going to get the poor mouth now as well as getting the other stuff.
And with all the injuries and cock, we're shagged on. I got out to 11-4. Jesus, dear, I could tell you want to be high. All the profit you took from Kilmallock Friday night. I know what I've been doing, isn't it?
And Mark, looking ahead to Dalo,
on an interesting or on a serious note, what will be interesting is the time gap that Waterford will have to prepare as opposed to Cork. It's going to be very interesting in terms of, I know Mark is playing it down there and he's saying, and Waterford are serious value at 11-4 to turn over Cork because, you're talking about the Waterford Championship being concluded probably in Hurling Championship being concluded. Probably they probably have a month of a start on Cork, if you like. Now Cork will probably play that down. But I think I said this openly on one of the podcasts last year that I met two of the Cork boys last year in Man Pint. I made this point last year. I'd say it was 11 days before they played Tip and they were only going back on the Tuesday night. They were genuinely had been with their clubs all the way through the Cork Championship. They hadn't been together in any capacity whatsoever, genuinely. And I said to myself, Jesus, Liam Sheedy and the boys are coming to Parky Cueve now with Liam's first championship game. I just felt the preparation would catch up with them. And I know Cork have done that well traditionally, as have Kilkenny. They've managed that 2-week period, but it'll just be interesting to see how that materialises. I know it's a long way away, but there
is no change whatsoever since last year to this year. I was talking to Shamie Hannity during the week. He's related to me, and he swore to me blind. Under no circumstances have they met, have they been together. And I don't know if that's been replicated in other counties, but I can only speak for Cork. And I said this last week, Cork will play it by the rules. you know, they won't be meeting up, and they're getting that from the top right down, Derek. And you know, that's no secret. And look, you're on next on ever, so we know exactly what's going on. We know that Liam Cahill has the boys out a couple of nights a week, like, you know. So and they're playing accordingly. So look, we'll be talking next week to see how the likes of Conor Lehane and all these fellas will, Patrick Horgan, they'll be live on the television RT on Sunday evening. So we'll know a little bit more on Saturday evening. We'll know a bit more about how Cork play, how the Cork and the inter-county fellas are going.
And Mark, before we move away from Cork, right, the Championship DRC, Emo Killie are short price favourites to win it again. Are we looking, like, I was going to say, is there any fancy you have there for the Championship? Middleton, Douglas, Glen Rovers, Sarsfields, is there a threat? Do you see a change possibly coming?
I do.
This is quickly coming into a betting podcast. Every week now.
I suppose if you were, I think in McKinley you'll find it very hard anyway to put four in a row together. So if I was doing anything, I'd be laying in McKinley not to win the county. If I had an outside fancy, I think two teams this year that are going to give it a serious rattle. Ben O'Connor is training Middleton, and I know the boys have taken to him like a duck to water. And they're, for the first time ever, they are really, really in good physical shape. They'll take a bit of their match against Sars on Friday night now, which is the first game of the championship, will be a very interesting one. Couldn't surprise me to see Middleton winning that one. But the real outside fences for the county this year would be Blackrock. They've been to the county final 2 years ago. Probably could have beaten in McKinley on a given day. They had six players due to go to America, but the COVID has put a stop on that. The famous break for the students, for the college lads going away for 3 months. So that has been a big thing. And they're the biggest, most physical team we have in the county. And if any team is to take on in McKinley, it'll be Blackrock this year. They're led by Fergal Ryan and John Brown, who they got caught. They won the league last year. And they went up to Morne Abbey to play Newtown Shandrum. And Tim O'Manning was on fire. And the week after the league final, said they got caught unaware of something. I don't think they'll get caught this year. There will be an outside fancy for me to each this year.
Very good.
Good, yeah. And even in Clare, lads, you know, we're talking about, you know, Belly A's and the 6 mile bridges, but my old outside fancy that Aina Kinlemona Friday night, very, very impressive, and made light work of Clooney Quinn, who were in the final 2 years ago. I think they could be the team there. And just on that, lads, I suppose we Ken Hogan last week, and in fairness to him, he called it fairly bang on. I was the only one that got it wrong, TJ. But he said that Thurles had really got their act together, and he fancied them to beat Kilrowan, who had been kind of threatening to make a breakthrough, and they did that with a bit of aplomb as well over the weekend. And also the Tumi Vara and Boris Ali served it up, of course. No love lost, and served up a cracker with I think Joey McLaughlin nailing a free late for Tumi for a draw there.
Yeah, but you also mentioned that Owen Lane was back in charge of Tumi Vara, and that he would have them well tuned up and ready to go, and he was spot on in that assessment. Like,
yeah, bang on. And I suppose that's a long way to go, but that's one of the funniest ones. I have to tell you, this was, you were looking for something to, you know, I had streamed Airog and Ting at 1 o'clock and 6 mile Airog and 6 mile bridge, and then I was trying to see, our match was 6:30, so I was going to chance my arm go into that. But then I was trying to, Colin Lynch is training Ross Gray. So Ken pointed out to us last week how, I think it was Clonaulty and Airog and McCarthy had come together to do a live Facebook stream. But obviously Drummond Inch and Ross Gray had done the same in Temple Moor for their game. So I was rooting around the internet, and next thing I picked up Ross Gray and Drummond Inch live Facebook streaming. And you know what they had was? A commentator from each side. Right? They came together. They obviously put up one of their characters each up on the pallet with the camera. And lads, it was the nearest thing to F and Eddie all those years ago.
The bear. Turned into the bear.
I swear, like, Shemi Kenlon at one stage, like, they came from behind now. Ross Gray had him in huge trouble, and Lynch getting a good tune out of him. Would you know, they wouldn't have many names that you'd know, like, but Shemi Cannon at one stage anyway, did he take too many steps or was he fouled, you know? And it has to be a free in rest, says your man, for throwing it. I'm saying, just because he's Jamie Callanan hurling the eel in my ass, says your man. How's he entitled that free there? And, oh, lads, I tell you, there's all sorts of stuff happening at the moment that's weird and wonderful. And that was one of the ones that lit up my... I knocked about 25 minutes out of it. I just got into it about half time, about 5 minutes after half time. And it was just comedy stuff. Like, and it actually took a lucky enough, Shamie, a miss hit free. And they had in Temple Moor, they had one of these bits of astro, you know, out along nearly to the 21. And there was such rain at the time. It just hit the astro and skated into the roof of the net. Anyway.
Dale, you could be onto something there for either for Larry and the Examiner. Do you know that fan zone there on Sky Sports where you can just tap into the fans where they go mad? Like, can you imagine some of the real passionate club supporters who just can see nothing, only their own team, and it's always a free to them? It'd be some crack and some viewing, I'd imagine, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and the other thing with the live streaming, lads, with the no crowds there either, right?
You hear everything.
The language that's been used. I tell you, McDonagh, and who was on the team? Who was the...
Colmore, sorry.
The two of them. When Joe, and we'll come to that now, but when Joe, the ref, went over to the linesman to ask him, did he pull off Kevin Hines' helmet? Joe's, like, if it was Sky Sports, they'd have been apologising. No, maybe the two boys were in Irish, but I couldn't understand it anyway. But let's come into that, like, I mean, we don't want to associate Joe Kenning and dirty play, let's face it, over the years. I'd say he's been the victim of it more than in a long way, percentage-wise, than but a straight red for Joe for supposedly pulling off Kevin Hines' helmet. What did you make of it, whole thing? It smelt to me of a linesman playing God anyway, and I'm going to... I don't care who he is or what his name is, I'm going to... make a statement here.
Well, it wasn't the red card, I'm a dealer for sure. I did see it in television. I saw the playback. Like you said, Joe is not a dirty player, but irrespective of whether he is or he wasn't, it's a wrong call. It will be rescinded this week. He clearly didn't pull the helmet off. There was a bit of a tangle there. Like, it was a 50-50. Like, looked like to me as if Kevin Hines had a hold of Joe's hand and he just pulled him in, which you see plenty of, and the two of them went to the ground. My problem with the referees, and it's a bit of an issue because we had a game last week on the 3-1 where a goal was given and the umpire wasn't sure, but he gave the goal. I think in the case of a red card or those type of decisions, I think the linesman or the referee has to be fully sure. You can't go on any bit of assumption or you think what happened or you saw a helmet coming off. You have to clearly have seen that helmet being pulled off. And that, for me, has got to be key going forward. I've seen too many decisions. Like, we turn around, you see a fella hitting the ground. You can't automatically assume, Dale, that you just swung and hit a fella, right? You have to basically have seen it in order to be able to give a fella a straight red.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, like, we're seeing it the whole time, I'd say, even on Sky Sports, you know, where they're using VAR and even they're getting it wrong. And we have these retired referees coming in assessing the ref's performance. But, geez, that was, like, the match was won 16 to 16 points at the time. And within about 2 minutes, then his nephew was sent off for interfering with the helmet. Again, I think he got a second yellow maybe now, Jack Kenning.
No,
straight red as well. Was a mark maybe now, yeah.
Again, yeah.
Okay. But then they got hockey then because the 13 men obviously. But incident, Derek, did you?
Oh, would you believe I streamed the Mount Sinai Clan A match in yesterday and then I turned on, there was football on TG Carr and then I went into the Mothers to get a bit of dinner on Sunday and when I was in there, I saw the first half. Now, I did see... not incidents, but Kevin Hines and Joe were very... Kevin Hines was really tight marking, I found, on Joe. Yes, he was really, you know, not niggly now, but there was certainly you know, they were going at it like any two players would. I'd say his details to kind of keep Joe as quiet as possible, if you like. But I actually missed the incident in point, and I haven't seen it back. But on the helmets, it's just the anomaly around the helmets, Anthony. As I well know, Tadhg de Burgh, quarter final of 17. You know, we were up and down to Croke Park, we all the way to DRA over a helmet, you know, over deliberate, actually written in the referee's report, was deliberate pulling of the helmet, you know. And we were arguing, as was Harry Keogh from Exford, that it was dislodged within the tackle, you know. So you have fellas not loosening helmets, but you have fellas that you often see even during games, more often than not, fellas are fixing their helmets to make sure they have it as tight as possible. If it gets dislodged in any way, there's, you know, it's just so much of a grey area around dislodging of the helmets. But for me, there's nobody deliberately pulling off a helmet. You know what I mean? And if you can't prove that, well, then it's no red card. You know, it's as simple as. You know, if a fella has a kind of a schmozzle or they have a set to and the helmet dislodges in the middle of that kind of fracas, if you like, that's a different scenario than someone deliberately grabbing a helmet and pulling the helmet off someone in terms of, you know, gamesmanship. So, yeah, it's just so much grey around the helmet in many ways. When you all didn't wear helmets, you'd be kind of nearly to us kind of, you know, it was a different scenario then. But it's it seems to be popping up a little bit more over the last, since we came back, in terms of the, you know, people looking for, not for advantage, but for just a debate in the area, I suppose.
Yeah, but, and just to add to the point, I suppose, Dale, is that, like you mentioned there, that you can hear everything live in the television now because there's no crowd there. And the amount of fellas that were roaring in from the sideline, the helmet. Yeah. I mean, it's just too, like, you're putting undue pressure on linesmen and referees and umpires as well to make a decision. And we're always complaining on whatever form of media you're on that, oh, the umpires and the linesmen aren't giving the referees enough help and stuff like that. So, you know, I know that the linesmen had a big part to play in the sending off of Joe Canning yesterday. And So I go back to the All-Ireland final last year. We had to see the incident between Cathal Barrett and Richie Hogan four times before we actually saw the elbow getting him on the kisser, like, you know. And, like, we saw that with video analysis that was slowed down. And you still had fellas that said, oh, twas a sending off, it wasn't a sending off. So I think in a split second yesterday, you may have had a linesman that just said, look, yeah, I think he did take off his helmet. But I think TJ is right and Derek is right. Unless you actually physically see the helmet being tampered with or being dragged off of a player, you don't issue a yellow or red card to the player. I mean, it does get dislodged very easy. There's no point in saying otherwise. But linesman had only one. He only saw that for one incident yesterday in a split second. And it is so, in the whole emotion of the thing, they get it wrong, lads. They get it wrong, you know. So
I think, you know what I mean? Like, we're not going to have a scenario where supporters outside the wire are not going to start shouting to try and get an advantage for their team. Like, you know, but the linesman has to be. And that was gas, like, that's probably in contrast. I thought about that last night as well, actually, because I think last year, some of the RTE people anyway were able to hear James Owen's mic piece, and that Johnny Murphy was doing the line from Limerick at the time, and he felt that maybe Cathal Barrett was making a meal of it, but James Owens took his time, you know, whether he was getting water or something, but he took his time and then gave the red card, you know, and that was probably getting different advice from the linesman. So it's just, you'd wonder how many Zoom calls between refs and stuff was going on over the lockdown about what way rules are going to be enforced.
I think Johnny Murphy was telling me recently, Dale, that they talk, I think, every Thursday, I think, that's where he used to try and make sure that they're doing things right. But a red card, or a straight red card in a hurling game now, is just a massive call. The way teams use possession, if you're a man down now, they just will hurt you. And I just think going forward, even looking forward to the inter-county scene, right, that for any red card to be given, I think there has to be a huge degree of certainty that you know for certain that the player did wrong, and then he gets his red card. Like, we don't want to see any tackles that are just not right, but in fairness, we don't want the physicality and the manliness to go either. So, but we need the referees to play their part. And what Mark is saying there about people roaring in over the wire, like, we all get that. Do you know what I mean? That's part and parcel of it. You just have to get used to it. Like, what you're looking for here is the linesmen, the referees, and the umpires just do your job. Like, the linesman had a job to do, and as far as I'm concerned, he got it wrong, and it was a wrong call. And it was a big call and a big bearing in the match. No, maybe Sarris would have still won, but it was a turning point on the 50th minute, 3 points down, like, with Joe Canning on the pitch. We all know what Joe's capable of.
Yeah, and he had just actually soloed through, geez, an amazing run and a shot that literally went
nearly killed the umpire.
Nearly killed the umpire. Yeah. So that's great stuff as usual. Just thanks to Derek for joining us today. We look forward maybe to having you later on the year there, when the bigger stuff comes into play. Well, we won't call it the bigger stuff this year, no, because we're loving this club stuff, and you know, we'll wish you the best of luck at the weekend as well. Obviously, just get it up to Chinner as quick as you can and let him off on this solo run for the first goal the last day he got for you. Oh, Jesus, I wouldn't like to have been coming out to meet him from Conor Beck anyway, I tell you. But the main thing, lads, anyway, to take from today is that the Cork Championship is starting this weekend. there are six or seven or eight divisions, and it will be the stuff of epics altogether.
Yeah.
And go down to the bookies and the Mind the Galway races and have your shirt on BlackRock to win it out.
Yeah. They're about 12 to 1. Dela, before you go, can I just refer to your piece in the paper this morning? Obviously, you must have got great schooling. So, really, really great story. And I suppose just to get the insight into what went on into a crazy year. I would love to see the movie, all right, in 1998. It was a mad time. And I suppose that bit of madness that was brought to the championship. But certainly a good reading this morning. But I'm impressed by your writing. That's what I'm trying to say here.
It was COVID, I suppose, and we had to go backwards rather than anything current. So we had to look back. And I was always saying that, like, you nearly need a two-parter for 98. Anyway, you know, and I mean, I'm not even mentioning the final with Offaly winning and Brian Whelan having the flu and going up full forward. I'm not even mentioning that, or, you know, but it's just from our point of view, lads, the madness and the every single day. And that time, I had a sports shop in O'Connell Street, like, and people were coming in droves, not buying anything now. they were just coming in. And I had a bit of an office upstairs. I used to be above hiding in the office in case they wanted to talk about this or what was said here and what. And I remember when Lucknan did that State of the Nation speech on Clare FM with Colm O'Connor. Colm was with Clare FM at the time, now of the Examiner, obviously. We used to go for the tea break across to the Diamond Bar opposite the shop, and a load of us used to meet there in the morning. And there might be 11, 12, and there could be a few drinking a couple of pints and a couple eating sandwiches around the place, and could be 20, 25 in there, you know. You could hear a pin drop, like, to know what he was going to say, where we were at and what we were at and what we were going doing. And, oh, stop with it. It was just the weirdest year. But, you know, great old memories out of it as well. It isn't all about winning either, is it? Do you know, it's about being involved in something that was magical and mad and absolutely... It was the year that'll never be forgotten anyway. But some of the stuff.
Did you ever meet Jimmy Cooney since, Dylan?
I did. And we'd have a great way with the Cooneys and Sars, TJ, for all the world now. Not so much now, but back in the 90s where we were probably strong and clear. And of course, they were really good with the Cooneys and Hopper and all. We used to go up to them every year and they'd come down to us the following year, if you know what I mean. And of course, they'd turn into a few pints as well. And they were one of the only Galway clubs we didn't have rows with. Because, as you know, Galway Club hurling at times can be fairly saucy. But Sars and ourselves got on great. And, yeah, like, as I said this morning, the timekeeping was a mistake, like, which no more than myself playing wing back made mistakes on the day. But, I mean, not to send off Digger, who would be great friends with Digger, for hitting 40, like, because Jimmy's reasoning for that was... Clare were 11 points up, like, to the ruined it all together. Like, like, Jesus, was not Ireland semi-final. So, but that was just the humanity breaking out in Jimmy, I think. Do you know, like, it was, we'd make an old game of it anyway, like, you know, so, sir. It was great.
He was the foil guy in the whole thing, didn't he? Because I don't think Jimmy Cooney put a whistle back in his mouth after that.
I think he actually came back and reffed one game just to say that didn't finish him.
Right, okay.
Might have been only a club game, but he didn't know. He was awful shook. I mean, I read his account of that afterwards where, you know, even he stayed in the dressing room for something like 2.5 hours afterwards.
That must be awful.
You know, yeah. Oh, Jesus. Like that night in Dublin, lads, only for the couple of points in the Burlington. And then reporters at the time used to nearly have access to lads, you know. And they knew we were in the Burlington as well. And I remember five or six reporters coming in and they sniffing over around myself and Baker and two. We were having a couple of pints together. And, well, what'll happen, lads? We were asking them, like, you know.
Yeah.
And she couldn't be a replay, sure. I said, the referee's decision is final. And then Martin Brand, he said to me, I remember, I know there is a rule there, all right, Della. He said that if the time is not completed, you know. it was getting nearer and nearer all the time that there was going to be a replay. And, but the big thing, we shouldn't have agreed to the replay the following day until we got out of Dublin. We should have got out of Dublin and got home and cocooned ourselves in Clare and said, well, we'll have a chat about it during the week and we might play in a week or two. But sure, if you want to play the All-Ireland without us, you can. You know, I think that was the mistake we made overall. But sure, at the time, we thought we were nearly invincible. Like, so, you know, anyway, you learn quickly. There's no one invincible.
And in fairness, Anthony, there's a lovely bit of perspective, you know, with the death of your brother that year, you know, in terms of dominating the whole year. I think what you said about the journey, or even, you know, not about winning, I think that gave it a great balance. You know, there's madness in the article, there's excitement in the article, there's a kind of insight into the article, but there's also a good bit of lovely perspective there at the end in terms of your own brother, you know?
Yeah, Dar, I tell you, and we had travelled to Dublin, myself, my mate Ty Collins, and up, and of course we did the whole circuit and Leeson Street, and had gone back to the hotel, and we were in bed, and mobile phones were just about there at the time, but mine was ringing away anyway, you know, the big hand grenade ones, and it was my brother Martin, and he said, come home, he said, Pascal is dead, like, and like, 40-year-old guy, like, and you know, you just, I put down, I just hung up, and I was lying there for about a minute, and I remember ringing him back, the house phone, and one of my sisters answered the house phone, because obviously they'd all gathered at home, and she was in bits, and that's when it hit me, and I remember having to go over and knock on Tighe's door and say, here, let's go back home, and I remember sending him around Ross Gray on the old Dublin Road that time. Kyle, slow down a bit, will you? Because bad enough, poor old Packy being gone, but the two of us will be gone in a minute because the race he was taking corners and passing out cars, you know. But look, yeah, he did, Derek. And you know what he used to do? He was based in London, and for the Munster finals, the Ireland finals, maybe the semis, he used to come home and stay with the mother in the house, and it would have happened to him anyway, I think, because the autopsy. So, I mean, we can imagine the scenario being gone off to Dublin and hearing that, you know, put it all in.
Yeah.
Life is funny, isn't it? It's much bigger than all this, you know. That was it. So, that's great stuff as always. Pleasure. And looking forward to seeing all these games from Cork over the weekend and the quality. and I just want to say to all Middleton club people out there, lads, I would have seen you over the last few years and you looked fit to me. But Mark Landers is saying now that you're, for the first time in years, you're fit. So, best of luck with that. But look,
avoid yellow.
Come on.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.